going into federal court to sue. It delegated the state's authority to any individual to enforce the law. That just is a radical notion. And they were very disturbed by that. But again, I'm going to say this over and over again. This is not about abortion. And if we care about abortion, we have to keep our eyes on the prize, which is the case in Mississippi that will be argued in December. And I don't see these two justices coming out the same way in that direct challenge to Roe and Casey.
Did anything shock you in what you heard yesterday?
Well, I was pleased because, of course, five justices had already permitted the Texas law to go into effect on two occasions. So I was pleased that they actually understood the draconian nature of the Texas law. I don't think that came from a concern about the women who were affected by the law or a concern about the unavailability of abortion. I think more importantly, it was their concern about access to the courts for this issue and every other issue. In fact, more importantly, the other issues they care about, like religious freedom and gun rights.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, Catherine Kitty Colbert, the lawyer who argued the landmark case in 1992, credited with saving Roe v. Wade, co-founder of the Center for Reproductive Rights, co-author of Controlling Women, What We Must Do Now to Save Reproductive Freedom. We'll link to her op-ed piece in the New York Times. Roe is as good as gone. It's time for a new strategy. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for two positions, Director of Finance Administration and a Human Resources Manager. Learn more at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Berkey, Nina Guzder, Masai Rhodes, Noreen Sheikh, Maria Terracena. Special thanks to Julie Crosby. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Opera, one of the most important historical musical forms, and one upon which our current popular music is based, has been telling critical stories for centuries. But what is its place in modern society? Imagine a world where a student at Stony Brook can never see an opera and never will. Without public support and care, and young people embracing it, opera could become a thing of the past. But what is opera really about? Why are these stories set to music so important to our culture? Because they speak to universal themes which our society struggles with today. Composers from the 17th century to the present have represented the most important issues of the day. Corrupt governments, gender power imbalances, colonialism, national aspirations, cultural and political appraisals, and the corrosive effects of amoral actions. Rich in topics, including history, class conflict, gender politics, use of artist propaganda, and inequality. The production of opera provides a springboard for discussion of many of the larger issues we face today.
Learn about opera, listen to an opera, and attend an opera.
Rhea Courtney Bosick, WUSB,
and Brenda Harris, Executive Director of Stony Brook Opera, a program on campus.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Yes, I'm joining you.
And we're starting this show the exact same way we started last week's show, sitting in an old Volkswagen Rabbit about to start. Actually, no, there's an extra component here. You're putting a seatbelt on, which you did last week. You just did it before we started recording. So let's get that. That's the sound of safety. No airbags, though, but I'll overlook that for the moment. Will the car start, Kyle?
I'm hoping so, yeah. Want to find out?
Yeah, it's very dramatic. What are you doing now?
I'm running the glow plugs.
I believe I hear the purr of the engine. as it begins another day of service. This is one dependable car, I gotta say. It took us to the rainforest last week, which we're going to talk about, because that was one of the most incredible experiences ever. But first, I want to wish everybody a happy Halloween, because where we are, it's Halloween. Where you are, it's Election Day. But really, aren't they both the same thing? It's a special occasion.
Equally frightening.
Absolutely. And the day afterwards, you just cannot believe what happened. Regardless, let's talk about the rainforest, because, boy, that was... And you're going to be driving. We'll comment on things that we see. We're going out, what, to get pumpkins or something else?
Oh, we're just going to a local farmer's stand to get some fresh produce.
We're in the suburbs of Seattle, I guess is probably the best way to describe it. But last week, last weekend, actually, I think it was on Sunday... Sunday, we just decided to drive out to the rainforest, the Ho Rainforest, H-O-H. I have that correct?
Yes, that's how it is spelled.
And it was raining. It was raining really hard. The funny thing is, there's been a parallel with weather conditions between the East Coast and the West Coast, because while we were experiencing something known as a bomb cyclone, you guys... back in New York, we're also experiencing a bomb cyclone, or maybe you got it a day afterwards. I'm not really sure it was the appropriate phrase to use. It's possible some weatherman just saw a headline from the West and said, yeah, that's a good way to frighten people. But we both got a lot of rain. But what better way to see a rainforest than in the rain? It really was an incredible thing. I was not at all concerned about getting wet. I was not concerned about being uncomfortable, because I wasn't uncomfortable. It was just an amazing thing. I could have stayed out there all day. We took a hike to, what was it called? The Hall of Mosses?
Yes, it is a trailhead. There's several small... they're short trails, but it's an educational center and great example of all the moss and fungi and various things that can grow within and in under the forest canopy.
The rainforest on the western coast of Washington State, it's actually one of a few, but it is home to so many different ecosystems, forms of life. What's interesting is we didn't really see any animal life, but we knew it was there. It's all around. There's elk. I believe there are bobcats.
Yeah, there are bobcats and... lynx of sorts. I think a lynx. I'm not sure. Smaller cats, and a lot of. But that's not it. I mean, I heard someone there. sorry, I interrupt myself. But it really got to me because someone was asking the park ranger when we were walking around the visitor center. You know, are there going to be these kinds of animals? Well, that's not really what it's about. The ranger kind of let them down gently, saying, well, you know, they're kind of getting ready to hibernate and stuff, but I think people mistake places like this sometimes for a zoo. And, you know, nature doesn't always have to perform for you to be valid. And I think that's an important thing when you visit parks. And to understand how there are microscopic things and tiny little processes that you would never really be aware of without... people dedicating themselves to studying the science and how all of this stuff, the interplay and how it exists and forms as this one thing we kind of think of as nature.
Well, now I feel a bit silly having thrown that tantrum about not seeing an elk. But you're right. It's somehow bigger than that. And the real star of the show was the forest itself. And that was simply stunning. Obviously, you can't really do it justice on the radio, but I'll try. It basically, so many different types of trees. Oh my God, the size of the trees. It's not the redwood forest, no, okay, but it is. It's pretty close. Just trees that went on hundreds of feet and have been there for hundreds of years. And the greenery, just so lush, and just made you feel like nature's doing good, at least here. Of course, there are all kinds of threats, and climate change is a big consideration and something that everyone is concerned with. But this is what it's all about. This is what has to be preserved. And to drive, you know, several hours from Seattle proper and realize this place is still here in a land where, ironically enough, a corporation called Amazon is kind of wiping things out in its wake, and with its sheer size and power. This was a nice contrast. It was a really, really nice thing to see. And Kyle, you did all the driving, because this is your car, and you won't let anybody else touch it. And I know that must have been hard, because it was pouring rain, really, really hard. What was that like?
Well, it was intense for a couple things. I didn't have a fan working on my heater, so we were really dependent on warming up the car over longer periods. I've fixed that now. Thankfully, my rear defrosters and those things were working well. But I just, you know, I was in for the adventure. I think, you know, I maintain the vehicle pretty well so that we can kind of go a little bit further afield than maybe people might ordinarily think on a whim. And, you know, we checked the tires, make sure everything was ready to go. But once we were navigating the ferry system and navigating all of the ferry system and sorting out how to get places, you know, further than the Puget Sound area and the city limits, I felt good. I felt familiar. I'd been on some of those roads before, but it was like, you know, setting out on a new adventure and exploring places I hadn't really ever been to. It was the first time I'd really sought out a specific park on my own as an adult. I know lots of people, that's probably why the housing market's crazy. People flock here just to have access to that, and they plan trips, you know, every single weekend of every year. That wasn't something I really spent my time on, or I'm not at a place in my life where that's really accessible. And so to plan something with you was really, it was kind of magical and in a storm, no less. Yeah, seeing it as it really is all the time. I mean, ordinarily, as not like some sort of idealized vacation resort type thing. No, it is climatic. It is full of variation in the weather patterns and so forth. And you roll with that. And luckily, having a vehicle that's a bit reliable and kind of old school, it was like a nice grand tour around the peninsula. And thankfully, everything held together. We didn't have any kind of incidents.
Yeah, and we were wondering if we'd be the only people out there at the rainforest, but it turned out lots of people came in the rain and did what we did, which basically take one of the hikes and explore, take time. It was a very welcoming environment, albeit wet, but once you get past that, it's just super enjoyable and something that I definitely recommend for anyone. Oh, I see we've turned the engine off, so that must mean we've arrived at our destination. I'm sorry, I had my eyes closed the whole time. We've arrived at our destination. The sun is bright, that's why I had my eyes closed. I'm glad you got the fan fixed for the heater, but you don't need it anymore because it's not raining. It was great, though, to see this particular part of the world, this particular part of the country, the Pacific Northwest, in wetness. You know, because the last couple of times I came out here, it was dry and hot, and this is how it should be, or this was how it should be. This is nice, too, this kind of crisp autumn weather that we're experiencing right now. Good for Halloween, and today is Halloween for us again, so I guess we'll be seeing some Halloween activities later on. But right now, we've arrived at this is a farm stand, I take it, and we're going to buy apples. I see Washington apples there. That looks tempting. Maybe we'll buy a pumpkin. I don't know. And we'll be back to discuss some more things we've been doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go check out what's left from the fall harvest here.
Yeah, those people are really going through everything. Hope there's anything left. Okay, well, we've come from the vegetable stand. I'm always blown away by the size of vegetables out here. For some reason, carrots are like 3 times the size as they are back home. And there's cauliflower that I swear was as big as a bowling ball. And plus things I'd never heard of before. And this is all normal to people from this area.
Well, yeah, there's a pretty big agricultural community in some of the valleys and lowland areas. Of course, a large amount of that growing and produce and farmland is in the east, on the other side of the Cascade Mountains. But it's certainly local food. Wherever you can find it, it's the best way to get fresh stuff that is, like you said, just really large and healthy, and it feels good to see that stuff.
It really does, and a whole lot of people there rummaging through, of course, pumpkins of all sizes and colors. We saw pastel-type pumpkins, which I think would really make for great designs, and if I can find such a stand anywhere in Long Island next time I'm around for Halloween, that's how I want to decorate, not just the orange, stereotypical pumpkins, but all kinds of different colors. And what are the ones with all the growths on them? I kind of like those.
Those are the knucklehead pumpkins.
Knuckleheads. Yeah, I identify with those. So pumpkins don't have to look all perfect and orange. They can be all different colors and shapes and sizes. It's really pretty awesome. Kind of like people, kind of like us. Yes, there's a lesson to be learned there. So that was fun. You know, something else that almost happened was the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis, which supposedly could have been visible last night, meaning Saturday night, but again, in a remarkable parallel with the East Coast, the same thing was happening over there. They had a possibility, or you, listeners, had a possibility of seeing the Northern Lights on Saturday night. But, as always, at least for me, it didn't happen, and I still have yet to see them. But it's just funny to realize that people back home are going through the same thing that we are out here. And speaking of back home, I want to thank people who have sent in suggestions so far on things that we can see on the way back, because we are driving back, and we've gotten quite a few suggestions so far. Get this, next week our show is only 15 minutes long, because there's a basketball game that is being broadcast at 6:15. So we might just spend those 15 minutes just reading through some of the suggestions that people have given us. And of course, we'll be recording things for future broadcast on the voyage back. But for right now, pretty much all we can say is that we will be heading east. Well, in an easterly direction. We might go south as well. There's really not much north we can go without going into Canada, which I guess we could do, because I have my passport. Do you have your passport?
Always.
All right, so we could go to Canada if we wanted to. But I hear that Canadians aren't quite as happy to see Americans as they usually are, because of the pandemic and all. But, you know, that's just the nature of things. It's a changing world.
You want me to stop at Bigfoot Java over there?
Bigfoot Java. That's one of those drive-up coffee places. You know, there were so many of those. I go through this every time I come out here. I wonder, why don't we have drive-up espresso plate? You know, they're about the size of... Remember Photomat? Remember the old photo processing places that you would drive up and hand over your film and come back later and get it? It's like that, except they sell coffee. And what are bikini baristas? I see those everywhere.
Oh, we've talked about these. It's basically scantily clad baristas serving you mediocre coffee at a sort of drive-through style establishment.
And that's what people want. I saw one of those open very late, like 10 o'clock at night. So that's an interesting way to get coffee. We've been, I think, finding more interesting coffee places, because there really are quite a bunch. I mean, the worst thing you can do is come to Seattle and go to Starbucks, which, okay, we did once, but only because we were doing laundry and had nowhere else to go. but there are so many other incredible places, and we try and check out a different one almost every day.
Yeah, there's a lot of waves of coffee prevalence in it comes in and out in history, but also in recent years. So I guess they're probably, depending on how you look at it, they're on the third or fourth wave of new kinds of coffee places. And believe it or not, even the places I think are great and fantastic, they're not doing maybe as much of the new experimental stuff that there are in other parts of town that I just don't even know about because I'm feeling a bit of a stranger in my own lands here. And so I myself went searching online to locate new coffee establishments and new places that are, you know, maybe they have a cause behind them, or they're getting a very specific variety of coffee bean. Many places are cafes that also roast and thus package and sell their own coffee beans. We went to one yesterday in Renton that they actually also sold green coffee beans, which allows someone to buy and roast as they would. So that's even more like a wholesale grocer selling you something that is not fully prepared to make a drink with. But many people are familiar with some of the traditional ways of preparing coffee. Certainly Turkish coffee is prepared in a very specific manner. People may be interested in coming up with their own, or trying their own hand at roasting beans over a fire or in a very small batch, and to see how their technique changes the taste of a particular bean that they've purchased that's basically unroasted. And you usually don't see that at a place that you would order a drink. Someone saying, hey, maybe you could do it better.
And that was an incredible coffee shop. It, it has African roots. A very, very big space on a corner. But all the inside seating wasn't in use because of precautions. But it just looked really, really positive. And I read about them, and they've got quite a respectable history. And oh, look, we're passing by the Great Wall Shopping Mall. We've been here a couple of times, too. The Great Wall Shopping Mall is a place where a bunch of different Asian-themed restaurants of sorts, or Vietnamese, Korean, Chinese, of course, Japanese. I guess in a way it's sort of sticking all that part of the world in one place. But there are plenty of other places you can go as well. It's not the only place. It's not Chinatown inside a mall or anything like that. But it's really kind of cool, kind of neat to find these little places. We've done well finding unusual type of food. Like we were looking for Sichuan Chinese, which we were afraid wasn't out here as much. And we've been fortunate in finding a couple of places. Still working on Indian, still working on finding decent Indian places. A lot of Thai, a lot of Vietnamese. So it's always a lesson to learn. But are we heading to a particular coffee place?
Not yet. I had a couple ideas, but a lot of what I was looking at was further in the city, so I'm not sure exactly where we're going to end up.
Well, I can ask my phone to help if we want to look up something and head in that direction. I wouldn't mind going back to the place in Renton. That was really kind of neat. There's one in Seattle you described as a Black Lives Matter coffee shop. What do you know about that?
Yeah, it's a place called Black Coffee Northwest, and they're located north of Seattle in the Shoreline area. I had read a couple things about them opening, and I'm not 100% clear on what happened, but last month someone got in a dispute, and it delayed their opening because they threw a Molotov cocktail at the location that their coffee place was opening at. It shares a space with a church. It was a little confusing to figure out what was going on with that, but basically I think it was just someone really upset over getting towed. in some bizarre circumstance. I don't think they were targeted necessarily, but they recently opened and are all about justice and serving the community, fostering community, and being a hub for bettering people's lives, specifically Black justice, social justice, and other movements in the area, I believe. I don't know. I haven't been there yet, but that's one on our list as well.
Well, that's quite an interesting story, and it's kind of hard to believe that a coffee shop that is affiliated or sympathized with Black Lives Matter getting firebombed isn't somehow related to that. But in Seattle, I guess it could be related to parking or having your car towed. I'm not quite sure how that's the coffee shop's fault.
That's quite an escalation, but I wouldn't put it past somebody to be really upset about that.
Speaking of escalations, we've escalated onto I-5. Or as what, we're not on I-5?
No, this is 167.
Oh, I see signs. Okay, so we're coming to 405 South to 5. All right. And now 405 North to Bellevue.
Yes.
So many highways.
Yes, this is an area, sort of the beginning of what used to be called the Renton S-curves.
Unbelievable. I can't keep up with all the different highways and roads. I wish there were less of them, because there is so much natural beauty here and so many great things, like the vegetable place we just came from, and I like space, and it just seems like too many people are coming out here, and there's too many cars and too many massive corporations. I guess that's the price of success. And too many bad drivers. Boy, that guy cut you off bad. I've never seen people cut off other people so many times.
Yeah, I'm not sure of their gender, but they were not... they were driving, like, with one hand with their torso on the steering wheel. So I don't know what technique that is, but pseudo-aggressive. I don't know. I can't explain it. There was some study years ago I used to reference that was about how intelligent the drivers are here. But I can't say that is current data, because just on the streets you see a lot of people driving really recklessly, not paying attention, not being antagonistic with other drivers. I'm susceptible myself, because I drive a car that occasionally gets mistaken for a slow car, and that's not always the case, especially on the highway. And when people cut you off really closely in a dangerous way because they've judged you to be slow, it can get really frustrating and escalate if you're not careful.
Yeah, that's the nature of the roads out here. It's good training, though, for driving all the way across the country, because we're going to be driving through some interesting areas and places where we might not immediately feel welcome. I hope that's a temporary thing. But I think, like everywhere that we've been, people are friendly, and it should be a good experience, but we'll see. On the subject of social justice, though, as we mentioned, the BLM coffee shop, which I definitely want to visit. I've noticed so much more expression in the streets, in public places, about these sorts of things. For instance, I saw a Black Lives Matter bus. It was a city bus that had a Black Lives Matter mural on the side of it. You see it everywhere. You see these proclamations that everyone is welcome, and people really seem to be handling it well. I'm sure there is pushback, but it's nothing like the kind of pushback that we're used to seeing in the mass media. It's basically, yeah, deal with it. Black Lives Matter. It's not a controversial thing at all, and it's just good to see that. And I think we need to say that more. We need to not hedge ourselves or worry about the people that are going to react in some irrational way, or somehow inject cops into the equation, because that's not what the statement is about. I think they get it out here, and I think we need to get it more back home. Another thing that I've noticed is that the pandemic has basically stepped up a bit as far as precautions, and what the situation now is in King County, which encompasses Seattle and its surrounding areas, you now have to show proof that you were vaccinated to go into most establishments, and people are enforcing that. And you know what? It's not a big deal at all. It's really not a big deal. What happens is, I have a copy of my card that I actually have two copies of my card that I keep in different pockets, and my actual card is stashed safely somewhere. So I just basically take that out. Of course, I have a mask on as well, and that's another thing that's enforced, is having masks. I see somebody crossing the street in front of us, he's wearing a mask. It's not a big deal. People just do this. And guess what? In Seattle, very, very few people are getting sick. It's almost over. It's incredible how easy it is to deal with these things. But as far as showing the proof, yeah, they ask. You show it to them. Most places just take a cursory glance at it. Because, yeah, it's easy to forge the thing. We all know that. But making that gesture, that effort to just have a piece of paper in your pocket, you know, we're going to presume that you're being honest. There has to be some trust. And I think the vast majority of people are. One person inside an establishment asked for ID to compare. And I thanked him for that because, yeah, that's taking the extra step, extra effort to make sure that it's actually real. And there's really no problem doing these things. There's no problem getting vaccinated. There's no problem saying that you're vaccinated. There's no problem wearing a mask. There's no problem saying Black Lives Matter. These are basic things. These are simple things. We make them into problems by having all these back and forth debates, and we I call them pseudo debates because you're taking a side that's fairly irrational and equating it with the side that makes sense, so that it appears that it's a 50-50 situation when it's really not. It's more like a 90-10 at best. It's just amazing to see how things work when people work together, and that's what I like here. Of course, we're about to drive through the part of America where that's not the case, so we'll be reporting on that as well. That'll be interesting. Looking forward to it. Really am. Love driving and seeing the country. Learned a lot just by seeing how people do things here. And, I don't know, Kyle, how do you feel about all that?
Well, I think that it's in every part of the country. There's waves of it, and we hear reporting from people, friends, and they're noticing it. There's going to be, I think, a mix of all of that wherever we go. People complying and being really careful, or doing their best, and maybe needing to hear a little bit of thanks. And I know sometimes they can't always appreciate it, but people that are adhering to this stuff, they should be acknowledged for keeping us all safe, or making an attempt to keep things, to keep everybody healthy, and treated equally. So, to that end, I commend the people that are, you know, at the front lines, and now it's really in the service industries and for events. Everybody wants to do things, be around others, and get on with things that were so long deferred. So, I guess when people aren't adhering to it, you got to just stand strong in the face of it. Do what's best for you, and don't take any crap.
I've been admonished twice, actually, and just to give you a sense of how seriously it's taken here. Once in Tacoma, when I was on a streetcar, tram, whatever you want to call it, we ran for it. I forgot to put my mask on, and there was There was like a cop or some security guy on the tram that said, do you have a mask? And I'm like, oh my God, yes, I do. Sorry. And I put it on, no big deal. And then the other day in a coffee shop, I had taken my mask off because, well, I was inside the coffee shop. There were people sitting. They didn't have masks on. But the rule is if you're standing up or ordering, you should have the mask on. So, okay, no problem. Put it on. Yeah, you feel a little defensive, like, okay, well, you know, I wasn't really doing anything wrong, but sure, I'll follow the rules. How much sense does it actually make if I'm standing here or sitting there? There's a difference. But you know what? It makes things so much easier just to have a set way of doing things. I get that. They're not trying to give me a hard time or anything like that, and I should know better. You know, that's how it works. And when things are safe, then we can go back to however we want to do things. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun. So, are we parking?
Yeah, I'm engaging in the act of parking, right?
I guess I shouldn't talk to you while you're engaging in the act of parking, because that can be... Oh, you've parked. Okay. Well, I guess it was very easy. You have a vehicle with no power steering, so it's incredible to watch the things that you're able to accomplish. And other cars have it so easy compared to this thing. But wow, again, you know, I'm so happy that it's gotten us places safely and just been so reliable. It's an incredible machine.
Yeah, it's got a really funny history, and it's not what it appears to be, but that's what I like about it.
And you could say that about all of us, I think. Well, we're here, but where's here? Where are we?
Oh, this is the transit center in Renton.
Are we going somewhere? Oh, the coffee shop. We're going to the coffee shop.
Yeah, we're going to go into this coffee place in Renton that is brand new. Should I say the name?
Well, you might as well. People can figure it out.
Boon Boona.
Okay, well, now you said a name. I guess you have to spell it.
B-O-O-N-B-O-O-N-A.
All right. You know what? We can take this contraption with us and record from outside in the street because we can't sit inside. And maybe do the rest of the show from there.
As long as they're open.
Oh, don't say that. It's Halloween. They have to be open. Or it's Election Day. Which is it? I can't ever make up. You know, it's also the beginning of the month. Yeah.
Incredible.
I need coffee. How was your coffee?
Oh, mine was, well, fantastic.
We have to think about that, huh? It was really good. We went to the same place in Renton, and it was a bit sunny. We had to sit outside, and there's no umbrellas, and the sun was hitting us full in the face, so couldn't really do audio there. But we came to this amazing place, this park. I didn't know there was a Lake Washington. Well, I guess I figured there was a Lake Washington somewhere. I didn't know it was right here, but you took me to this really incredible park that was right nearby. You want to tell me something about it?
Yeah, It just was at a loss. We were kind of trying to decide what we could do in the area that would be kind of interesting, and this is something I remember from when I was a little kid. In fact, as the lore goes, there's a story I've been told in my family that apparently I nearly drowned at this particular park one time.
Oh, that's a story. Tell us.
I don't know what I was doing. All parents, I think this is their worst nightmare. Fitting for Halloween, All Hallows Eve, to tell a spooky story like this. But basically, I was a young toddler wandering around, and basically got really close to the water's edge and then just sort of disappeared. And apparently, I had fallen in just at the edge of a dock. And either my mother or someone around, I believe it was my mom, quickly grabbed me before I had totally disappeared. But I was, one way or another, I was fished from this very lake and, returned back to terrestrial life. And I've adjusted, I've since learned, and in fact...
Not brought back to life, but just returned to your environment.
That's all I said. I just said returned to terrestrial, terra firma, all that. And not very long after, I began swimming lessons. So... everything worked out, and maybe just a little reminder to keep an eye on people. And I had a follow-up. I mean, I was at another lake helping and had responsibility. Was told to watch a young person, and they do this. They go and they wander by the dock, and I was kind of too far away in that moment. So I've had the experience at both ends now that, you know, when someone says, you know, keep an eye on these young people around the docks, they do gravitate towards this stuff. And, well, I didn't make that mistake ever again. And
did that person go into the water, too?
No, no. Thankfully, that time I was just scolded for not having, for having allowed the young person to get anywhere near it. But I did the same thing when I was younger. So it just, it was a good reminder and a life lesson for me. I'm always keeping an eye out for large bodies of water and people not being careful around it.
Well, you know what probably saved you was the splash, the sound.
Yeah, I don't know. Someone was watching, and that's the important thing. You can't be too careful. And so this park is forever. It is a reminder of that moment in my life, even though that's not principally what it's about. But as you can probably surmise, it's near a lake, and there are a lot of docks and piers and ways to get out over the water a little bit. So that's the hazard here in this park. But there's a lot of green space. There's even a walk-up seafood bar. And it's a lovely little park in Renton.
It's really nice. It doesn't appear touristy at all. It seems like a lot of local people. And very, you mentioned this before, very diverse, which is something you don't often see in many parts of the Seattle area, is diversity. Here you see it a lot. In fact, there are families out. There's a big gathering over at the next table, actually. I think, judging by the big balloon, eight, some kids having an eighth birthday party. And I've got my eye on a piece of cake, actually, because it's just sitting there, and they don't seem to be, anyway, that's neither here nor there.
No, this is a good point. They're carving pumpkins and not really paying attention.
Yeah, they're not watching the cake at all.
Yeah.
Will you cover me?
I mean, I don't know. How big is that coat? You think maybe if I, like, held it up, I could be sort of a distraction or something?
It's like taking candy from a baby, which, by the way, that's another show.
Well, let's be real. This is an 8-year-old we're talking about. He could probably make a cake.
Maybe. So we're almost out of time on this special Election Day edition of the show. It is Halloween for us. Again, we're recording this on Sunday. But we know that it's Tuesday when you're listening to, well, assuming you're listening to it on the radio or live on the internet, you could be listening to this down the road, in which case you know what happened on Tuesday and how things turned out. I sure hope things turn out well. I'm very frustrated by the way Democrats seem to always manage to get blamed for things that really they should be blaming the other party for. Economy falling apart. Well, you know, a lot of that has to do with the pandemic and lack of preparation that happened last year. Whose fault was that? Not Joe Biden. It's kind of crazy how his approval rating is in the toilet now. But, you know, if you ask people, you think Joe Biden's doing a good job? A lot of people will say no. A lot of people that we have similar political leanings with will say no. They're saying no for different reasons. They're saying no because he hasn't gotten accomplished everything he said he would get accomplished. Again, not his fault. You know, Joe Manchin and other people are standing in the way. I'm not sure how he's supposed to get past that. It would be great if he was able to, but more people have to work together. You can't just blame it on one person. I know people want to blame it on one person, but it's not accurate or fair. But it makes it seem like he is, I believe, more unpopular than he actually is. I think once something actually happens that annoys the Republicans, his approval rating will go up. It'll go down with Republicans. Of course it will go down with them. But I just don't like how it's being portrayed right now, as if Democrats are at a disadvantage, because what happens is that translates to the way people feel and turnout and basically the perception that what they do doesn't matter. It does matter. People need to turn out. I don't know if this is coming too late for people in various parts of the country, but if the polls are still open where you are, go to them and vote, for God's sake. I'm not telling you how to vote. I'm saying you have to exercise your right to vote. If you ever take that for granted, then other people make decisions for you. And that is how we get into trouble. And on an off year like this, quote unquote off year, because the local elections might be the most important elections of all, because they make they make all kinds of evil possible, because you have your legislatures and your state senates and all kinds of other county and town races where if you have people that want to put into play some kind of policy, that's where it starts. And then this is something Republicans understand. They know how to build these bases that just keep reinforcing themselves. And that's how you have things like, you know, the Texas abortion quote-unquote law that somehow isn't being enforced by anyone in law enforcement. So it's a very pivotal moment. And if say, the governor's race in Virginia does not go the Democrats' way, it's going to be a punch in the stomach for Democrats everywhere. And it could affect how 2022 goes, because people will say, oh, Democrats aren't getting anything done and they're less popular than ever. Again, all perception, but it can turn into reality if we start believing those perceptions. So I'm pretty worried about the way things are going. I don't understand how Republicans can win any race after all the crap that we've been through in the past few years. It's just very strange to me how they seem to somehow escape blame and just come up with the latest thing that people can panic about. Critical race theory is a good example of that. And we're seeing that locally. We're seeing that in school districts right around the Stony Brook area. Smithtown is one of them, where parents are up in arms because of critical race theory, because their kids are being taught that they're racist. And that's not what's happening at all. In fact, critical race theory is not even being taught in schools. It's something that you might pursue in higher education. There's nothing inherently evil about learning about racism or things like that. But what happens in elementary schools and in junior high school, senior high school, middle school, whatever, people are taught history. And sometimes the history doesn't paint us in a very positive light. That's part of history. You have to learn that. A lot of parents have basically swallowed this lie that their kids are being taught that they're racist, and that's not what's happening. That's not what's happening. But they're turning out to vote against this, thinking that if they vote Republican, it's somehow going to go away. It was never here. That's not what's taking place. You can't get that message through, and especially with the media giving each side equal time. The liars who have no truth on their side get equal time to the people who are saying, no, this is what's happening. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating because you just see how everyone is being manipulated. So, you know, if enough angry parents show up to vote with this misperception in their heads, it could easily sway things in a way that benefits Republicans, even though they certainly do not deserve any benefit whatsoever. That is how politics works. And the worst thing you can do is not show up and voice your opinion. So I really, really hope that people show up en masse and realize the importance that they have. Remember, there are so many more of us than there are of them. I hate using us and them. I don't like that. But right now, that's what it is. There are people who want to go a particular destructive route and get rid of voting rights, get rid of abortion rights, get rid of all sorts of things that we have fought for over the decades, and basically turn the country back through the 1950s and beyond. And there are people who want to move forward and have a more progressive agenda, health care, mass transit, infrastructure, things like that. You know that the other side is afraid of this when they start calling people communist for these things, for supporting infrastructure, for supporting health care, for supporting free education on at certain levels, community college and preschool and things like that. That's not the kind of communism that I learned about. It was very, very different in true communist countries and in the few remaining ones that exist. So when you see people throwing around these labels, they're basically scared. But their fear is contagious. And if they're able to convince people that, yeah, this is reality, they might actually win. And then even though there are so many more of us than them, it's a minority government. And don't say it can't happen here. It already did happen here. They are gerrymandering all over the place. And all kinds of injustices are possible because they know how to play the game. And they do such a good job, whereas Democrats, they don't know how to get out of their own way. They don't know how to stop arguing with each other and do something strong and unapologetic. You know, a simple thing, you know, like saying Black Lives Matter becomes contentious. So I really, really hope that we find our courage and move forward.
Yeah, just make some noise on the real issues that are impacting the most people. These non-issues or these hyperbolic things that are being brought up are meant to keep the outrage level high so that there is no resignation or no admitting of blame that is probably going to be more and more apparent, you know, where it is deserved and where not, and, you know, who to support and who probably should not be leading us in the next elections. Those decisions will be made, and the more noise that can be made, I think it just serves the purpose of keeping a very high outrage level, which is really only beneficial in preventing actual conversations and debates and discussions about the critically complex issues that we face going forward and in the future. And I will just say, just I know it's getting a little tired looking back constantly and appreciating where this could have gone had the former vice president acted a certain way or acted another way. You know, we are better off now. We're actually looking at these issues. The margins are tight in government, but we are not consuming our time with rage and otherism and castigating entire classes of people at the border. That has waned because we have a leadership change, and I think we should just really count how lucky we are to be able to move past some of that. We're going to hear some retrospective and a lot of details about how things went, and hopefully that occurs in parallel, but for the time being, let's at least appreciate that we can attack one another. It's not very helpful right now, but at least we can toss the bad ideas out and really unite around the good ideas and the good changes that are needed.
Yeah, you know, this whole $3.5 trillion mess that has been going on in the past few weeks, we know that's not going to move forward as it was. It's going to move forward in some way, reduced way, and it's frustrating. I know progressives feel that. I feel that. But we have to look at this realistically. And either we get nothing or we get something. And if we look at this as a step and not a conclusion, I think we can live with that, because what we have to do is simply vote more. More voting, voting for more people that we support, that support our ideas, and not just give up, not just say, we didn't get everything we wanted, it doesn't work, I'm not going to vote again. That's the worst thing you can do. That is like voting for the other side, because they will win. So, okay, we don't get everything we want this time, but next time we vote for more progressive-type candidates, and that assumes that there is a will for more progressive-type candidates. If there isn't, if we can't get more progressive-type candidates to be elected, then we have to accept that and work within that framework. But I think it is possible, and I think instead of hearing all this talk about the Democrats are going to lose the House or the Senate in the midterms, how about we talk about getting more in the House or the Senate for Democrats? Let's not let the narrative be how much they're going to lose, but how much they're going to gain. And why? There has never been more to argue in favor of basically getting the other side out of power. We're flirting with 750,000 people dead in the last year due to a virus, many of which could have been prevented. We're talking about the economy that has fallen apart because of that. You know, it's a question of who do you blame? Who do you blame for things? You can manage to blame Joe Biden for everything under the sun, but that's not realistic. And if you simply look at the facts, you know, it's the facts are on your side. You just have to argue. and not just say, well, there's no point even talking because these people are just going to prevail no matter what. The fetus way of looking at things, and we can do so much better.
Yeah, and his primary focus has been getting elected in the first place and getting a handle on this health crisis nationwide, getting a cohesive national initiative moving in the right direction and well-coordinated. Now we're talking about doses of vaccine for even younger classes of people being approved by the FDA. This has been a concerted effort to drive through what was an incredibly chaotic pandemic, and the planning and responses still something we're evaluating and writhing from, dare I say. The repercussions of how it was initially handled and even the difficulties now with people putting so much effort into it, it is a huge effort and not something to balk at as though it was just a little side project. It has been the sole focus. So I really feel like coming around the administration saying that they've been dropping the ball on so many other things. Well, without having a handle on the health situation, are any of those other things actually going to be affected in the right way with the right amount of resources if we can't get healthy people out there working and affecting those things? So it just becomes a circular critique. Yeah, we can critique it all day long. We can go all the way back in history. That's not thinking forward, though.
And that's why you should get out and vote. That's our civics lesson for today. Election day, if you still have time, get to those polls. The local elections matter. All elections matter. Hey, that's a good slogan, isn't it? Okay, we are out of time. It's been amazing here. We are about to start the drive back. We have a 15-minute show next week, and who knows what we'll be doing there. But if you have ideas for how we should be winding our way back home, things that we should see or experience on the way, no matter how far-flung or weird the state might be, write to us, otw@2600.com, and give us your ideas. Until next week, this is Emmanuel.
And from the coast, I'm sorry.
It's such a simple thing. I just handed you my name and say your name. That's all you got to do. This is Emmanuel.
And from the beaches of Lake Washington, this is Kyle.
All right, not how I would have done it, but that's fine. That's fine.
Oh, wait, I got it.
And from the shores of Lake Washington, this has been Kyle.
Stay tuned for Finn, where more sanity will prevail. Good night.
I'm gonna meet, I'm your choice. I wanna be a lady. I can't do the dandy. Yeah, kids, get out and vote right now. With you, Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB Stony Brook. That's right. It's election day today. You may not think it's that big a deal. It's like an off election. It's a big deal. You have people running in every county legislative district in Suffolk County and Nassau. Get out and vote, because that's how you're going to be repped. Get out there and do it now. Go vote. So while you guys are getting in the car and going out to vote and doing the things you have to do, we're going to dip into a brand new record of some recently discovered recordings of only one of two recordings of a live version of A Love Supreme by John Coltrane. So we're going to dip in and out of that over the course of the evening, and you need to go out and vote. That's what I say. But meanwhile, here's the master and his entourage right here, WUSB Stony Brook, just like Emmanuel and Kyle live in Seattle.